Hey, tourpreneurs, it's Mitch Bach, and just a quick note before we begin today's episode. Tourpreneur is currently sponsored by Google. We're thankful for their support of our community, and we are offering with them a completely free course helping you unlock the power and potential of Google's Things to Do program, which is specifically helping tour operators add their tours to Google in new ways that gives you new exposure and more direct bookings. To learn more, go to tourpreneur.com/Google. And as always, show notes, more resources, links to our newsletter, our business coaching community, and so much more are available on tourpreneur.com. Now to the episode.
I am Nikki from the Tourpreneur team, and I am here today with Peter McGovern, president and founder of Ed Odyssey. I am very excited to be talking to Peter today for multiple reasons. When I was first introduced to Peter, the note from Mitch was simply, you should talk to Peter. He has a lot of really interesting things to say. I feel like the community would love to hear from him. And so we just hopped on a call and started chatting, and there were truly a million things I could have asked you to speak about today, Peter. He is a seasoned entrepreneur with a passion for international education and real estate. He brings a wealth of experience and a forward-thinking approach to building successful teams. So that is what we are specifically going to talk about today, how to build an international team as you grow. So for those of you who are on your own, you're a solopreneur, maybe this feels really far away, but I do think it's good to think about your options and to see how someone's done it. For those of you who have expanded to several teams, I think this is something we don't really talk about, like how to do that well, how to manage your team, how to manage the brand, how do you keep that brand culture alive? So we'll cover all of this today. Peter, welcome.
Thanks, Nikki. Pleasure to be here. I'm excited to be here.
Do you want to start off by sharing a little bit about Ed Odyssey and maybe even your journey with it?
Sure. Yeah. Maybe a little bit about myself as it relates to this, and I'll talk about that. So I'm Peter. I'm based in Boston, which is where I grew up, but have also had an opportunity to live and work and study around the world. And I share that because travel's been a big part of my personal journey, learning about myself, learning about the world, figuring it all out, and I still am. And so going into college, study abroad was a very important thing to me. And I spent a year abroad in college, and leaving undergrad, I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do and had a few thoughts in my mind. But long story short, my professional career after college undergrad really began in education as a teacher. I was a classroom teacher teaching world languages, Spanish and Mandarin. And like I said, travel was important to me. Languages had become really special and important to me, but not something I was aware of growing up. And so when I started teaching, I wanted to share the world with my students because it was something that I knew well. I also knew firsthand how it had impacted me. And so from teaching, I founded at Odyssey. As you mentioned, I've been involved in a few different things. So I've three-time founder, have worked in a couple different sectors, but education has surely always been a piece of that. And so Ed Odyssey is turning 10 this year. So we were founded in 2024. It's been a wild ride. So much fun. And I think you mentioned a lot of your tourpreneur community are solopreneurs or solo individuals. And with few exceptions, and Ed Odyssey being one of them, Ed Odyssey started as like a one-person thing. It was just me. So I can totally get where people are in that journey. I've also run some much larger multinational entities. And so I had this, you know, unique experience in a lot of these different sizes and shape organizations that I'm sure we'll get into today. But I think especially for the solopreneurs, like you said, conversations and some of these things I think will be critical, because in order to grow, and we were kind of chit-chatting about this earlier, in order to grow, you can't do it all by yourself. And I think it took me a bit of time to realize it, But the sooner you realize you need a team in place and really lean in to that team is when I think a lot of us see some magic happening.
Yeah, we were, I mean, maybe it's worth bringing up some of these points that we were just chatting about before we started recording of that tends to be the difficult part. I mean, delegation is hard for a lot of reasons, ego being one of the main ones, but especially that it's hard to determine at what point it's no longer efficient for you to do it yourself. Because when you're doing it yourself for so long, you know, besides your own burnout, how can you really determine it? Was it different for you in different areas of work?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a couple different criteria. And I don't know if this is like an exhaustive list, but I'll think of some. Like, as we grew, I think the first things I might be outsourcing or delegating were things that I didn't like. Or things that I wasn't good at. And as we've continued to grow, you delegate for a lot of different reasons. You go through different phases. I, you know, am really proficient at skill A, but like once you get to $1 million or $5 million or $10 million in revenue, skill A is very different. And so like finance is a great example. I think a lot of us as solopreneurs can manage books and figure stuff out to an extent. But we were not all CFOs. And I think just knowing your skill set is really important. I know some of us are really great at marketing and sales, and that's our wheelhouse. Some of us are really good at product design or back end or something like that. And so I think knowing your skill sets also helps you delegate more efficiently.
That is a very salient point that you might be good at it in this stage, but your business grows and it changes. I've never given the thought that then all of a sudden you might not actually be as good at it as you thought you were simply because it's different.
And it's critical to know your team and yourself because you need to know when you're in over your head or when you're not good at something. And so you can actually start doing damage to your organization or hindering the growth because you're in the wrong seat at the wrong time.
Oh my gosh, yes. There's almost two ways to look at this in terms of growing a team. There's just in general expanding the team as we're talking about now. But then there's also specifically to travel, expanding cities, expanding countries. And each of those feels like a big deal. Is there any commonality? Is there any truth amongst just in general, if you're expanding, these are the things to keep in mind? Or is it really going to change depending on which of those expansions you're doing?
Well, I did, prepping for this call, I was trying to think, what is it that might be helpful to know? And I put down a few big picture items that I think generically kind of fit to a lot of things as I think about growing an international team or maybe growing a team in general. So maybe we can start there. And then if there's like specific aspects that you think of for your community, we can like dive into those as like case studies or case conversation points.
Yeah, that's perfect. I have a pen and paper ready.
Awesome. So I'll keep this brief so we can have more fun like on the talking part. But to start, I'll start by saying obviously where you're talking about it, but I think this is an important topic. Growing a team and just growing an organization in general, really, it's important to think about your team. I've always said 90% of every organization is the people, independent of sector or market. And so we're going to talk about tourism and study abroad and travel because that's what we do. But this applies to every entity, every sector. 90% of the organization is just the people in it. And so if we all agree on that starting point, what we're about to talk about is critical because if you don't have the right people, your organization is not going to grow. And if you don't retain the right people, you're not going to grow. And if you don't put the right people in the right seats, you're not going to grow. And so you have to figure out this alignment and have a plan in place. And as like a CEO or president or leader, I would argue that's perhaps one of your primary jobs. So let's see. So what did I have noted for important things to think about as you're growing an international team? The first thing I put down is to embrace diversity. And I mean that in all ways of diversity. I think I don't just mean DEI, but I mean perspectives, skills, experience. I have found that having a diverse team can offer innovative solutions, adaptability, new perspectives. And so that's been really important for us in our group. And reflecting on my seat, investing time in understanding the nuances of the country or city maybe, or state, and also the people in those locations. I think for a lot of us, I know my team is entirely remote. We work in a dozen countries around the globe, many different time zones. We speak, I think, 8 or 10 languages as a team. So the second piece is also understanding those nuances for each person on your team, because people approach work and relationships very differently based on their cultural and lived experience. And so understanding that and embracing that diversity, we have found to be a really beautiful, amazing thing that has really propelled our growth. The second point to grow a team I have is crystal clear vision. As CEO, I think this is my most important role. I'm responsible for clearly articulating the vision, the goals, the metrics, and the owners of those different pieces. I also regularly work to reinforce our core values and our missions and to maintain a company culture. That's all really important, but I think it's absolutely critical. Everyone in the company knows which direction the ship is going and kind of what some of those metrics are and how we're getting there. So at Odyssey, how this looks is what we call a roadmap. So everyone in the organization, we have the six W's, who we, mission, vision, values, our core audiences, our products, et cetera. We also have, and this is shared with the entire team, a 10-year North Star, kind of a guiding big principle. A 3-year plan, which is updated annually and is rather detailed. And then a 1-year vision, super specific, and we break that down into 90 days. That's shared with everyone, and everyone knows what's happening. And as a result, that really empowers every single individual on the team to know where we're going collectively, but also what they own individually. And that gives them a lot of freedom to do their roles exceptionally well. Particularly with an international team, it's just, you can't micromanage. I don't think it's a good management style anyways, but you can't even directly manage sometimes when people are in different time zones. With some of my leadership team, we overlap a few hours a day with daylight, but still manage to effectively go forward because we're all aligned and know what's happening. That leads really nicely to my third point, which is connection and communication. To grow a team, you have to talk. You're a team. And so we have to communicate both in person, face-to-face, or virtually, and also digitally. And so we have a cadence for this, and every organization has to figure out their cadence. For us, it's a mix of one-on-one meetings with certain people, team meetings with certain individual cohorts like sales and operations, and then a lot of different communication tools, email, text messages, online chat in the Google Suite, emails, commenting and tagging on like live documents online in the cloud that we use. So this is different for every organization. There's no right path, but having a communication strategy figured out, like how are we going to talk to one another? How often are we going to talk to one another? When do we talk to one another? That's really important for the work. And then separate from that, you don't want to just communicate, but connect as well. And so a lot of that is going to be professional in nature about the work that you're doing. But I think it's equally important to make sure you find some time to make it not all about work, particularly because you don't have that coffee talk. Like, you're not getting coffee with each other in the office all the time. Sometimes you might not even see people for a year or two in person, depending on how your team's set up. And so making sure you also have a little bit of time to connect as humans and friends and colleagues, I think it's really important too, and feeds right back into like the commenting and communication. It's so much easier to vibe when you're with, you know, colleagues that you know and trust versus this like mysterious person you don't have any rapport with. Last but not least, as we think about a team, I think it's really critical to have a role map and a hiring process. And so by role map, whether that's a first position or a 50th position, we know months ahead of time, years ahead of time, to some vagueness, we're already planning like what kind of growth we're going to be seeing and where. There's always some flexibility as you get into a bigger organization, there's going to be more flexibility built in. But if you're a solopreneur or a team of 5 or 10, and you're not quite sure what you're hiring next, that's okay. But you have to figure that out before you start like playing with things or hiring like 2 or 3 positions at one to maybe sort of kind of get it done. But then like, what's next? Really thinking about the trajectory of different positions is critical. And then once you know when and what you're hiring for, having a really amazing hiring process. There's no right way to do hiring, but there sure is a better way to do hiring. And knowing your interview process, having that figured out, having job positions figured out with some basic things like clear articulation of responsibilities, requirements, compensation structure, et cetera, is critical. And then on the back end, in addition to the hiring process, we have like a scorecard. Like, we go through an exercise to figure out what exactly we're hiring for and what those outcomes are before we post it live. It's no fun to waste your time or the candidate's time. Like, if you don't know what you're hiring for or what you're doing, it's not going to be a great hiring process. And more and equally important for you as the leader or CEO, you're wasting time and money hiring things that maybe don't make sense for your organization. So those are kind of my big 4 points, Nikki. And I'm happy to dive into any specifics or questions.
This is like speaking my language. In another life, had I known in high school that organizational development, I think, is the lane of that career, like that would have been like all this stuff gets me so excited about how to organize and systems and all that. I want to start at the beginning and go in order because I took all these notes and have all these thoughts. But I do want to just share, because it's a one-off, I did a wonderful exercise talking about how can you figure out the roles that you're going to have if you're doing it yourself. I had a group of solo business owners in a room. And we were trying to get them to do this, right, for future hiring. Like, what would your org chart look like? That was like the literal worksheet we printed out. And there was almost this resistance, as you're kind of hinting to, like, they're like, well, but this is all one role. Like, this is all my role. This is what I do. And it was almost getting them to see that they're wearing different hats, right? And it's like, I know you're doing it all, but what part of your brain are you using for these tasks? Okay, that's one role. And you can obviously do marketing, sales, that makes sense. But it was so nice to see them when they would plot it out on the paper and they would see, oh, this marketing, there's actually a lot on this list. I'm using a lot of parts of my brain, or there's these tasks that I enjoy and these tasks I don't. Marketing is actually, there's 3 different things under it, right, that you could break it up into. And then you could really fill out like a multinational org chart if you keep following it through. And as I said, it has to be flexible, but there's something nice, even if you don't have the timeline, just knowing those roles, because I think it also gives you a little relief that you're juggling so many balls, and to see all those balls and be like, wow, this is actually a lot for one brain and one person. So I love that you brought it up, because it made me think of that exercise and it was so interesting.
That exercise is also helpful. I mean, as you think about growing your team for the first time, maybe like the first hire, if that's what really resonates with this community, making a list of all the things that you do And then seeing where that might be a role. Like you said, like sometimes we don't have the luxury of just like giving all the things we don't like to someone, right? But it has to be something that we can train and teach. It has to be something that we understand so we can pass it along.
But it makes sense, right? That you're saying at the beginning, it's probably a good exercise to think in that way because that's the step one. Once you're in the business, then you're probably doing it a little differently because now you're seeing the different roles and you're seeing who needs help. And to your point, using that roadmap, where you're going to grow and scale, you're using that to predict.
Yeah, and it came back. That first hire special, I think every company has a couple basic functions. So there's like sales and marketing. Sometimes those are divided depending on the organization. Finance is a function, as just assuming you're a company, the goal is to operate and generate profits, doing something good. And then operations. And again, this varies with every single organization, but knowing yourself can help you as you list out those functions exist in every organization. And so those are going to be somewhere on your list of to-do and responsibilities if you're by yourself or maybe part of a small team, you have multiple functions. But understanding where or what function you might not excel at and maybe separating that first and getting someone really great in, that can be critical. I know like for us, those two big functions were like sales and relationships and operations. Like those were really big and both had to happen. And so operations was the first one. Like I brought someone in who like fully owns operations and I kind of led sales for a bit while also serving as like the chief executive officer and things have grown up from there.
No, that makes sense. I feel like that is the organic order for the average tour operator. But I'm going to start back. Diversity on a team. I feel like this is a real hot topic even a couple of years ago now. I find it interesting. What do you think is the difference between finding a culture fit, because we're going to talk about culture and how important that is in the brand. So finding a culture fit and that not becoming like hiring like. Because I think when the company has a really strong culture and mission and values, it actually becomes more difficult to have diversity in your team because you're looking for a very specific type of person. And depending on how narrow that lane is, it gets, you know, how do you bring in a difference of thought and experience if you're looking for people who all subscribe to the same mission?
Well, with the roadmap, hopefully like your understanding of your organization is clear and hopefully your core values and mission all are well polished and really resonate with like what your org or company does and is. And then in the hiring process, if you're hiring for the role and the outcomes, you want the best person for the fit in terms of like skills and experience. And then the softer part of the interview is getting to know the person and making sure they're a cultural fit. I can see in other organizations that do some work in real estate and stuff like that. And so maybe that is like a much more niche thing in a very specific location, market, field, experience, et cetera. Well, for us, we're hiring in a dozen countries. Like it would be pretty difficult to even try to find homogeneous if we wanted to. So that, I don't know, maybe that's why I'm struggling.
It is hopeful to me that you struggle with that, to answer that, because you're like, it seems pretty obvious that you're going to have diversity in teams. I think people, I see it too. I mean, I'm not going to name any companies, but I see it, you know, for preference of language, for certain countries where they're in, where they end up hiring expats because there is a lack of English proficiency in certain areas. So I see that's where it starts to become more difficult. But again, I am talking about, you know, very specific countries and places. And but I do see that being a barrier sometimes to diversity.
Yeah. It's like your example with like the language thing. If I guess like not with any specific company, because I don't know who you're referring to or if you're thinking, but like if we are an English teaching organization that must have native English speakers and we're operating in 50 countries. Yes, like the number of native level English speakers that are required per like the role and stuff like that might be very limited. But then maybe as a CEO, if diversity is important to your organization, and hopefully it is, maybe you're making, maybe you need to reconsider like how you're marketing to recruit people. Like, are you only recruiting like through the U.S. embassy? Because you're only getting U.S. citizens that way. Or maybe is there another value add that, you know, makes sense for the organization by bringing in like local teaching assistants or something like that?
No, I think that's great. And I don't mean to drag us down this path too far. I was really excited that you brought it up, because I do think a lot of teams really struggle with this. So I was very excited that
yeah.
you are to be such a natural fit for a company that's multinational.
I know for us, I mean, this is a great example with like, this is something I bet regardless of location, like age, I think it can be like really, it can be easier to work with people that maybe are of like a similar generation to us. Cause we like, regardless of language, race, location, et cetera, like, I don't know, I'm guessing. And so maybe hiring someone 30 years older or 30 years younger, you're like, oh, well, will we understand each other? And I know at least for us in the hiring process, like that's not like maybe a criteria. It's not a criteria. So like the criteria about like on the income, the outcomes of the position and their experience. And I know we've put people in positions that are younger or older, and those come with like different training stuff, like for younger entry level and stuff like that. But all have been amazing, and they've, because they're like a top A pick and fit for our scorecard and goals of the position, their experience, I think like that diversity flavor only adds once they join the team.
I love that. That sounds amazing. Just in the interest of time, so because otherwise we could do the entire podcast on this, the strategy, the values, the mission, I think this is so often something that companies think about when they're starting up, and then it kind of becomes, you know, it lives in their head. It's not even out somewhere. It's not expressed. So I think these elements are so important. There's a fantastic book for anyone listening called Great Mondays by Josh Levine, I believe. And it's not travel-based, but it's about creating for your company exactly that, the missions, the values, and it's about having a company in general. And they're literally exercises to help you develop each of these and to do it with your team, which is really cool because you could do it pre-team, but you could also do it if you already have a team. You're like, oh, shoot, I don't have these things. They have you do it specifically because you pick out, you know, your culture warriors, they call them, the employees that you have that really embody what the company is to you. You have them fill out this framework, and then it lives with the owner, which is you in this case, right? And there's one owner of it who then disseminates the information, makes sure everyone's on the same page. Yeah. But I think that stuff is so fun to create, first of all. Do you find it that it has changed in the 10 years?
I was going to say that, yeah, it has changed. I think, and it's okay that those things develop over time. When I, last year I found my original business plan that it was like 9 years old, I was moving offices and I found it and I was reading through it, and so much had changed and my financial projections were way off and like lots of mistakes. It was one of my first business plans, but some things that hadn't changed were some like core aspects and things we're still articulating today. So like the mission and like bridging connection between people and authentic educational programs, all of that is like still very alive and well, and I think it's been really polished over the years. And then other things have changed, like the products using a general term, like the types of programs we offer, we've added to those, the destinations we've added to those. So who we are and what we do, what we do has changed. The who we are, I don't think it's dramatically changed, but it's been polished over the years. And I liked what you said about having it be kind of collective. I think in some sense, this, you know, they become even more polished over the years, the core values, the mission, the niche, et cetera, because it's been more collective and more perspectives and key people have come into that. And I'll also say it's really important, like I'm not only like helping create and define all these things, but as the CEO become the chief I'm evangelicalizing like our vision and values to the company. Like that's my role to make sure people know, understand, and like embody those things. And it becomes even more critical as you grow because people are hiring, you know, people are joining our organization that I'm not hiring. I often don't even meet with them till after they start. So they're already on our payroll. I barely or maybe don't even know them, some of these positions, because they're being hired in different departments. And in order for like for me to entrust my team to do all these things, like we're hiring and retaining and firing based on these factors.
Yeah, I love that you bring that up. Like once, and this kind of leads to something else I wanted to ask you about. Of once you have these plans, once they are written out, once they are formalized, and the fact that you have it in the 10-year, the 3-year, the 90-day is amazing. And I was curious, like how if you feel the effort is worth keeping all those documents live. But I wanted to point out now what you're saying is that once that's in place, then you don't have to be making the decisions every day. You don't have to be overseeing or micromanaging. There is almost freedom in structure, right? The more you have it structured, it reminds me of, I don't know where I heard this story, but it was again about branding. And they were saying, you know, to have your values is actually going to make your employees be able to make decisions on the ground. So the example they gave with Southwest Airlines, which is a domestic airline in the United States. Yeah. And I'm making these up, but it was something like there are 3 core values where the plane always leaves on time, there's no extra fees, and the guest is happy. Maybe something like that. So in that example, they said, okay, so now a guest is coming up to the front desk ticket clerk. They're running late. They're going to be late for their flight. You know, they want to still make it, but even if the clerk lets them through, they got to get through security. There's a chance they could hold up the plane. Well, that's not an option, right? Because the plane has to go on time. Well, now, you know, there is a spot on the next flight and it's open. There's an open seat. So now because they know these core values really well, the flight attendant, without having to check with the manager, without having to call to double check, they know, oh, the decision is simple. I will, for no fee, place this customer on the other seat that's already available because I know that will make the plane leave. The customer will be happy and they won't have to pay any extra, right? So it when you really break it down and make it really literal, then people can just kind of go off and live the brand. It's so much more efficient. People are happier. They feel like they have autonomy and ownership over their work.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that it functions so well, but all that has to be set up.
It has to be set up and it has to be practiced. It has to be like, it can't just be somewhere in a file. Like it needs to be front and present and discussed. But if you make a small effort to do that, as you say, I think the payoff is tenfold. Yes, this is work. It's some of the best work I do. I love our quarterly planning sessions with my leadership team. Yeah, it's a full day away from the business, but you have to work on the business, not just in the business. You need to take a break from being in the business and come back and work on it. Or there's going to be a lot of wasted effort and time and energy, and we all need balance as entrepreneurs. So you want to prioritize making smart decisions and planning.
Yeah, no, I think that's beautiful. I also wanted to ask you about this idea of connection and communication. You know, it makes sense, right? You're talking to people. You want to, you also want to do internal branding. I used to work for Intrepid and for the day tour division. And my job literally was brand. We didn't realize it at the time. I didn't have that in my title, but I was literally doing internal branding. We had over 1,500 freelance tour guides around the world. They worked for a million different companies, including ours. Like, they had no affinity. And my goal was to get them to love working for Intrepid. Like, literally my little goal written on my notebook was, when they're at a dinner party, I don't want them to say, when they're asked what they do, oh, I'm a tour guide. I want them to say, I work for this amazing company and this is why I love it, right? And that's brand. That's internal branding. So all of the work that I did was internal branding. So there was a lot of non-business talk. I did like a newsletter for them once every 2 weeks that would go out and just be talking about sharing stories and feedback and just talking to them so they felt included. We ended up implementing guide conferences. So once a year, and we ended up expanding and doing it regionally, we would have all of them come together. Because to your point, you see the difference. And, you know, this takes time and money to do, but to have them make that connection, now they had friends. You know, they would be in the room with another guy and say, oh, wait, you do a food tour? I do a food tour. You also have this happen on your tour, even though they're from different parts, different countries. And then, I mean, the benefits, they'd start selling each other's tours. You know, they'd have a guest, especially within a region. Like, they're on a tour in Rome. They'd say, oh, you're heading to Barcelona next? You have to take a tour with Vicky. She's amazing. You're going to love her. Like, they had these personal relationships. So the payoff, as you're referring to, was so huge simply by getting these guys to socialize, sponsored by the brand. How have you found in a post-pandemic world, this is pre-pandemic, have you found a way to do this sort of coffee talk in a way that doesn't feel like that forced office, you know what I mean, quiz show at the end of the day? Like, how can you make that feels good and people want to participate?
Yeah, to start, so communities, and all of us want to be part of communities, and community is critical for so many things. At work, and specifically like at Odyssey and what we're doing, some of it's really easy, and I'm sure a lot of us in the tourpreneur community can relate. We all love travel and sharing places or cultures or cities, whatever your respective roles are. So at Odyssey, we all love that. So we're already really dedicated and jazzed up what we do every day and wake up excited. So a big piece of my role is to make sure the employment place in that field, we're all doing something we love, is a great place to be. And I think we're doing some really exciting stuff. To your question specifically, how have we brought the coffee chats alive? I don't know if there's any great way to do a Zoom coffee chat. It's a Zoom coffee chat. We do a few different things. We have meetings. We take some time to have one-on-one meetings that are like probably 50% personal, 50% like some touch base about business things, but taking time to just talk about people and connect with each other. I don't know if that's a better coffee chat. It sounds like that might just be a coffee chat for me, but one-on-one time with your supervisors or colleagues or people that report up to you, I think is really important. We also do a couple of different things that help people connect in different ways, thinking about diversity of locations and timing and languages and also just preferences. So we have some chat boards. Like, we have a chat board where we like have wins and celebrates and highlights and things like that. People share pictures out with their partners or their families or whatever on the weekends, hiking with their dogs. Some recognition, I think, is a great way to build community. And we do, as you said, this is like budget dependent and things like that, but we do try to get together once in a while, or at least facilitate in-person events. And so we don't all meet up as a company annually or anything, but we do in small groups of 3 to 5, or like attending conferences and hopping on programs with one another. So the whole team is like, most of us have met, I've met everyone, and most of us have like met one another, which has been really critical, especially like in a remote first environment. And those coffees are always extra fun because they're in person, I guess.
Yeah, it's really hard to take that element away. Like, the in-person, it's hard to argue that it makes such a difference to have that. But I think even if you could have that once, then moving forward, it's so much easier to have those online because you've already built that relationship.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, so in our last 10 minutes, I would be remiss if I didn't go back to this idea of hiring. There's so many things we can go more into detail with, but I know that is something that everyone struggles with because I think it's such a solution, as you talk about it, to, you know, expanding, keeping things on brand, finding the right people, having diversity. It all comes down to being good at hiring. I mean, this is one of the number one struggles for tourpreneurs. I see it all the time. where to find people, how to find them, like how, you know, how do you not see the red flags ahead of time? Do you have any like tricks or experience that's worked for you over time that, or do you experience bad hires and that's just part of it?
Yes. There's no foolproof way to not once in a while maybe get a wrong fit. But I think if you take the time to design a hiring process that makes sense for you, the goal should be to hire with, 85 or 90% certainty that that person is the right fit for that seat. Any specific, like, say, I could talk a bit about like our hiring process or how we approach it in general, but I don't want to go on. Was there anything specific?
I think most people follow the same process, whether or not this is the best way to do it, but they put a posting somewhere. Ideally, the posting has details about the culture, it has specific things about what you're looking for, and then you're going through and you're vetting, right? So you're making that initial vet, and maybe that's simply by, and again, this is with tour guides, but something that I always tell people to do is put something, you know, like a homework, right? That's such an easy way to vet, like, please submit this, you know, your resume to this email along with a video saying whatever the top three things you think tourists get wrong in your city, which is a little quirky. You're going to see a personality, and then people have to do it. If they don't read to the bottom, they don't see it. That's an easy no, right? So there has to be mechanics of vetting. But then I think where it gets tricky is when you start bringing people in, and there's that period between talking to them, whether it's on the phone or in person, and onboarding them, which takes a lot of resource. I think that's where people start to be unsure about. I think they feel, I've already started the process.
Okay. You might. So that sparks a few things. I think putting the time into hiring is critical. You want to hire slow. And I think it all goes back to, I called it a scorecard earlier. You can call it anything you want, but we create a scorecard for every position. Before, actually, sometimes this is even helpful to do before you write the position description. So before you like copy and paste or go look at a bunch of different things online and like synthesize it into one position for like head of operations. Okay, like sounds good. Go like find a bunch of like operation things and put bullet points. Like what are you hiring? And so I think to back up and start, what are you hiring? A mission statement. I love, but we actually do a mission statement on our scorecard. So just like your mission statement as head of internal communication or brand development, was to like make people go home and chat about this and love their job. That is a mission statement. So you know, having a mission statement in one sentence, what is this position that you're calling XYZ? And then what are the 3, 5, 10 outcomes? What is this position going to do? It's going to send a monthly newsletter. It's going to bring revenue from here to here. It's going to, you know, have this outcome, quantitative outcome with our internal communication or brand development, et cetera. Writing that down before you get into like the fun position description, which is to market what you're hiring for pretty much, is critical. So then as you're reviewing applications, there's a lot of really pretty resumes and they catch our eye. And some people have like really nice writing styles. And I'm like, oh man, I love the way this person writes. This like really catches my eye. And it's like, wait, maybe they have a cute resume. Is it a fit for the scorecard? Haven't even met with them yet, but is it a fit for the scorecard? Did they submit the attached material or materials like you were talking about? So I think that's a first good step. And then our interview process is 2 to 3 interviews, depending on the position we're hiring for. And we have that thought out ahead of time. I have our interviews memorized because I've done enough of them, but we have a trainable tool that our team can use as we grow. And we have a really clear process for hiring that's thought out. And we get to know the person, both their resume and confirm and understand what's on the resume. And then we also get to know them as a person because that naturally happens. And then as we go through the interview process, we use that scorecard to rate people. And if there's anything that I can't rate you on, that means I need to figure that out next time we speak, because I need to know if you're a fit for this scorecard. So if I don't know if you can do sales, but you check off the other four boxes, I don't say close enough. I learn enough about you through asking great questions about all your amazing experience, and then I can like make a decision. And it will never be 100%, but I'm pretty confident we have a 90% success rate with this, or higher so far, thank goodness. But I think like we can honestly hire with a 90% confidence rate that we're getting good fits for the seats we're hiring for.
Wow, that's very high.
And
that's me.
And yeah. Reference checks are the final stage of the interview for every candidate. And I think remembering like you're hiring the right fit for it's a mutual fit, and it needs to be a good fit for the candidate and your organization and for the position. So just because I like you doesn't mean you're a right fit. And just because you have amazing experience doesn't mean you're the right fit for this position at my organization at this time. And it's not personal. And I think it's good to be respectful and communicate and all those things. There's no point in wasting anyone's time. But I think it's very valid for us to take a couple, you know, conversations to get to know one another. And then during those interviews, you know, you, the candidate, are also evaluating us at the same time. And so we're mindful of that too, because we realize the interview is not a one-way street. And so we need to learn a lot of things because we need to check our boxes and figure this out. And then in the process, I hope you'll bring a lot about me or us or whoever's doing the interview in, because they're going to be your potential future colleagues. So I don't know, does that shed a little bit of light on the topics you were?
Oh, yeah. No, I honestly, for me, the number one thing from all that, if people could take away one hiring tip, it is to hire slow and not wait until you're desperate.
Yeah. Hire slow, fire fast is like, I think a common thing that I've heard in circles. And so I think with firing fast, that doesn't mean in an inhumane way or whatever. I mean, it's part of discussions, but like, again, we also have like a vision and value and outcomes organized where people already know if they're red, yellow, or green. Like all of us should be green. All of us know like the vision, the values, and the outcomes. And if we know what we're doing, we know if we're doing them well or poorly. And so if hiring and firing, it's so objective. It's not about liking or not liking someone. It's like, is this a fit? And sometimes we've had to adjust positions. You know, like, yeah, this position doesn't make sense. Let's adjust it and make it the right seat for you too. And sometimes the seat is very clear and you're amazing, but you're not the right person for that right seat. And so then do we transition you to another seat, or is it not a fit? And so fire, I don't just mean like you're done today, but like figuring that out, because it's not happy for the employee or team member or the company if you're not in the right seat at the right time and the right person for it.
No, and I think that's another like beautiful nugget you said, of that it should be objective. Like it should be very objective. And because you have this scorecard and because you have it laid out, it's very clear. It's a number system. You're literally ranking. Like it's very clear. Like, again, we need to like each other. We need to be excited about each other. But if the other two don't fit, it's just not a fit. So it's not a matter of opinion or what do you think, and asking other people, getting multiple opinions. It is simply, do they fill this out or not? And because everyone has the same evaluation being done, it's then being done in an ethical way. I think that's brilliant, Peter. We've got an hour. We could go 3 more hours, especially if food were involved. I hope we do that one day, because I would love to sit and chat with you more. But thank you so much. I guess if there's one parting wisdom you could give to a particularly a solopreneur who is hoping to expand one day, any one piece of advice to leave them with?
I think in my advice for this isn't about growing a team or hiring per se, but enjoy the journey. You have to find like love in what you're doing. It's all really hard, and being an entrepreneur is particularly hard. But if you're doing something you love and you remember to enjoy the journey, there's going to be lots of hiccups and road bumps and learnings on the way, but It's what we all signed up for. It's part of that, and it's part of the fun. So make sure you don't forget that the journey is the fun part.
Love it. Thank you very much, Peter.
And that's today's episode. If you need show notes from today's conversation, make sure you go to tourpreneur.com, and there you'll also find so much more, including our free course on Google, Things to Do Leading to More Direct Bookings and More Exposure on Google, available again at tourpreneur.com/Google.